You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Friday the 18th of December 2020, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at RadioAlbion.com. Once again, we have your favourite co-host with me here today, under the new name of Grandpa Dan. Grandpa, how are you doing today? I must say, I am impressed with the new name change and the new name for the same podcast. I think it is definitely a move for the better. But welcome to the show anyway, and how are you doing?
Oh, I'm feeling great feels, Sven. I'm feeling great feels because I just want to say... I just want to say up front that my church has no ties to slavery. My vast amount of wealth that I've accumulated has absolutely zero ties to slavery. So I just want to get that out in the open right up front.
Well, it is important you said that, actually, because I was reading this article and I was thinking, well, this is about your local church, Grandpa. I hope you haven't got anything to do with it. And that's because we're going to be talking about the Episcopal Diocese of Texas today. In the wake of the social justice movement and the George Floyd protests, several U.S. religious groups have declared they will be devoting millions to racism-related reparations, particularly among the long-established Protestant churches that were active in the era of slavery. Many of these churches are now weighing how to make amends through financial investments and long-term programs benefiting African Americans. Among them are the Episcopal Diocese of Texas, which has promised $13 million and acknowledges that its first bishop in 1859 was a slaveholder, and a New York City Episcopal Church which erected a plaque noting the building's creation in 1810 was made possible by wealth resulting from slavery. Well, I mean, I am looking at this and I'm thinking, well, this shows you that these slaveholders, they weren't that bad, were they? If clergy were slaveholders, I mean, you really couldn't ask for a better master than the clergy. He's hardly going to be overworking these people. And I mean, they're talking about the church needs to make amends to them. It was the church that looked out for them. The church really looked after these people. Slavery itself, they looked at as an institution, as a way of looking out for the poor and the indigent. If they didn't have slavery, these people would starve. This is the way that they saw it. And the slaves themselves were happy with the agreement. They got fed, they got clothed, they got housed, they got medicated, their children got looked after, they got looked after in old age. And in return for it, they worked on the farm, they picked fruit, or they picked cotton, or as happened here, they helped build the church. And a lot of the times, these churches, they would build churches for the slaves as well, and they'd allow them to get married in it. It really, really wasn't that much different from the employment system that we have today. And even if you were somebody that was working on these ships, you could be whipped if you were a white man and you worked on a ship. The fact that there was physical discipline of these slaves, that was no different to any other work. There was still going to be physical discipline if you disobeyed the boss, if you did the wrong thing. White people were taken as indentured servants. Black freed slaves decided that they wanted to own slaves anyway. And the whole idea of slavery, we never would have gone there and exchanged trade for slaves if the black chiefs hadn't said, this is what we want to trade with you. This is what we have to trade with you. We want your products, and what we have to give you in exchange for those products are these black slaves. They want to go with you. They are happy to work. They will make very good workers. And they did make good workers. and they shared in the wealth. They were given food, they were given housing. As I said, they did share in this wealth. And yet today we see these churches wanting to make amends for doing that, wanting to make amends for actually rescuing these black Africans from a far worse fate. You think they were held by these African chiefs in Africa. They could have been sacrificed. They could have been eaten. These are the sort of things that went on. They could have just been killed for the fun of it. It was much better that they were actually being looked after by a white man in a civilized country than it was them being looked after by some cannibal chief out in darkest Africa. It is just incredible the way that this has been spun around to make the white man out to be the bad guy, when in actual fact, the white man is a good guy. And that's what this story is really telling us. Because if you had slaveholders who were also vicars and priests in the church, then that obviously meant that they did not see slavery as being a bad institution. They saw it as being a good institution. And something positive that they could do for these slaves was to employ them to help them build the church. Grandpa, what do you make of this? This is happening right in your district, isn't it? I'm sure you must be a regular goer to the Texas church that's actually doing this.
I don't know if you'd say my district. I mean, Texas as a state is larger than Germany. So, I mean, it's a pretty wide area. But I'm sad to say, Sven, I'm kind of disappointed because you completely missed the thing here. The church, this Episcopal church here was built from slavery. And this is the outrage here. And that means that what they did is they took the cotton that was picked and made cotton bales. You know, they bale it. They make bales of cotton. They go to the cotton gin, they bale this cotton into bales. And then they use those bales like bricks, and they literally built the church. It was a church built out of cotton. They made bricks out of the cotton bales. The church was literally built by cotton. Now, it's you see this pattern where these historical figures, these people from long ago, it's like they had no other, they're unpersoned except for slavery. I mean, this, they say, oh, well, the church's founder back in this hundreds of years ago, you know, had wealth from slavery. Well, I'm sure he did some other things too. How come we never hear about those other things? I know sometime back you did a show and I listened to somebody from over there in Britain, a historical figure in Britain, and he made his wealth from trade, and like one little aspect of the trade was slavery. And then he went on and created this school and did all of this philanthropic work, and none of it counts because he's a non-person except for slavery. No other accomplishments in life, no other success, no other anything to look towards, just that. You know, it doesn't matter if it's like 2% of their wealth came from that. It doesn't matter. That's the only way they exist in history. They unperson these historical figures. We've seen this with the statue tearing down and all of this nonsense. You know, you're not allowed to have any historical figures, any sort of, you know, ancestors you can look to. And if they are allowed to exist at all, it is only in a negative light. You're not allowed, you know, say we're not allowed to have any kind of historical figures or ancestors to look towards, you know, and say, wow, those guys really accomplished some great things. They're either non-person, they're made to exist not at all. We see this in entertainment and different things where they replace, you know, the white people that did things with blacks or whatever. And, you know, if they are allowed to exist, it's always in a negative light. It's always, well, they had no other accomplishments except slavery. That's it. They didn't do anything else. Forget anything positive they did. You know, none of that counts. Now, that having been said, the Episcopal Church, you have to realize they were like one of the first ones to jump up and do, you know, lesbian bishops and crap. So we're not exactly talking about a real, you know, I mean, they were first in the line for the cucking. So this doesn't exactly, you know, come as a real shock or a real surprise.
Well, the thing is, if we keep being told that our heroes of the past were really bad guys because they held slaves, well, in actual fact, no, these heroes of the past, we know that they were good people. So that tells us that slavery as an institution was not as bad as we're being told today. I can recall doing an interview with an expert on it recently, and he was saying, well, at the time they would say, well, marriage is also an institution, and there are more instances of wives being mistreated than there actually are of slaves being mistreated. But because when a slave was mistreated, that would get the headlines, and that is what gets talked about today. People just assume that that's what it was all the time. And why would you mistreat a slave that you'd paid the equivalent of £10,000 for? It would be like taking a sledgehammer to a brand new car. It's just something that wouldn't happen. Getting back to the article here. In addition, the Minnesota Council of Churches cites a host of injustices. From mid-19th century atrocities against Native Americans, well, that was a war against the Red Indians that were scalping and raping the white man and stealing all his cattle and his crops. There was a war going on, so you can't really say this was 19th century atrocities. It was a war. To police killings of black people. And again, we know that the police have only fired on black people when they're being fired on by the blacks themselves. You can check the statistics and see that these blacks that actually get shot by the police, it's actually more white people that get shot by the police, and the blacks are never unarmed. We recently saw that with one that was armed with a knife that was going for the police. So they say here that mid-19th century atrocities and police killings of black people in launching a first-of-its-kind Truth and Reparations Initiative, engaging its 25-member denomination. So they're linking America with South Africa and apartheid here by holding a Truth and Reparations Initiative. Although it hasn't announced any acts of reparations yet, the Southern Baptist Convention announced in October that its Southern Baptist Theological Seminary School had created a multi-million-dollar scholarship fund for African American students. In the same breath, however, the school declined to rename campus buildings named for founders with slavery connections, a move which many colleges and universities around the US have been actively making. Two things here. It's never enough. It doesn't matter what you do for these people, it will never be enough. They've just set up a multi-million dollar scholarship fund for African American students, but they're not happy because they want to change the names of the schools as well. If they change the names of the schools, it would be something else that they were not happy about. But more important than that, we're hearing here that they're going to set up a multi-million dollar scholarship fund for African American students. When since May of this year, Black Lives Matter have actually made $10.6 billion just since May of this year, which is just shy of the entire net income of Amazon for the whole of 2019, which was $11 billion. So in 8 months, Black Lives Matter have made $10.6 billion. And in 12 months last year, Amazon made $11 billion. And yet we now have these churches falling over themselves to give even more money to black people. I mean, when is it going to end? Surely $10.6 billion to Black Lives Matter, surely that is enough, almost as much as the entire net income of Amazon. Surely that is enough for them now. Do you think they're going to ease off a bit now, Grandpa, and stop asking for all these reparations now they got $10.6 billion out of gullible people for Black Lives Matter?
It sounds like a totally organic movement, doesn't it? Billions of dollars. Wow. Yeah, that sounds right. There's a lot to take in here with what you've covered. And you're right. They've declined to rename the buildings for now, but we know what's coming. They'll eventually cuck on. They just didn't want to do it all at once. They have to spread it out, you know. And yeah, it is interesting that they're kind of using these same terms that they used for South Africa and apartheid, you know, this truth commission or whatever. And for those of us who've been saying for years now that South Africa was the beta experiment for what they have planned for the rest of the world, namely for white countries around the world, to be proven once again that, I mean, it's hard being right, it is what it is. And we'll get the same, the end goal is the same outcome as South Africa. And if people don't understand how that's turned out, since, you know, we never hear about it again after they ended apartheid, it's like it ceased to exist. It's not been real rosy. So people aren't going to, and they bring up Native Americans. They always bring this crap up about, you know, how mistreated the Indians, all the poor Indians, you know, I guess because most people's historical perspectives of, is if they saw the movie Roots, so they think they know everything about slavery. You know, I read some of the accounts, you know, the firsthand accounts of children that were kidnapped by the Indians and how wonderful they were treated. You know, they go on about all the poor Indians, how they were treated so horribly. And yeah, you know, I'm sure they got some short end of the deals on some of that stuff. But if read some of the firsthand accounts of what these noble Indians were doing, they would kidnap these children, torture them in horrific ways, you know, and if they survived, they generally wound up being a little bit nuts. You know, the girls were immediately raped, of course, regardless pretty much of age. And yet that never gets mentioned. That's always glossed over and said, oh, these poor Indians were just so mistreated. They always try to paint this, you know, this, again, Disney picture of the Native Americans were just quietly and peacefully living one with nature. Now, they were running around brutalizing and butchering one another. That is the historical fact. I mean, that is just literally a fact. And the things they did to the settlers were just unimaginably horrible. I mean, how many settlers went out and raided Indian camps and, you know, kidnapped their children and tortured them to death? Not very many, if any at all. But yet we're always given this picture of the poor, noble Native Americans and how they were treated so poorly. Now, they're going to give all this money. This church is going to take the money that people put in the offering plate, thinking they're, you know, bettering the church's ability to spread the gospel. I assume that's what people put money in the plate for. Otherwise, they could just take that money and give it directly to Black Lives Matter. It's apparently going to the same place anyway. But people put this money, they take the money out of the offering plate, and they don't ask people. They don't hold a vote. We're supposed to have this democracy is supposed to be this great thing in this country. They don't hold a vote. Ask the parishioners, hey, you want to take your offerings and we'll do all of this. We'll set up some scholarships and give it to blacks. How about a vote on that? But no, of course they don't. So I just like to say, I mean, if you're a member of the church and you don't want your offerings to go that, send your offerings to me instead. It'll be more appreciated. I'll tell you that. But all these things require like zero historical knowledge. Like I say, if your historical understanding of slavery and these other issues is you saw the movie Roots, then you know, you're right in line to gobble this stuff up and think it's real. And this falls again in line with what we were talking about earlier about abolishing your history, abolishing your historical figures. And if they do exist, you rewrite them only in the context of they were slave owners, and you erase all of their other accomplishments. All of these things have to work together to push forward with this goal that they have. And if you, like I said before, if you want a glimpse of what that goal is, if for some reason you're uneducated and you think after apartheid ended in South Africa, everybody lived happily ever after, you can do about 5 minutes of research and discover that that's not the case. They had the push to end apartheid. It was in all the movies in Hollywood. And boy, oh, that was everybody's big cause. And they'd go up, these celebrities would stand up there and make their grandiose speeches about ending apartheid. And then it eventually ended. And we never heard about it again. Well, most people never heard about it again. And the result is just people have been, you know, the white farmers have been wiped out in a lot of cases. They've been horribly butchered and killed. The idea there is no equality under the law. The white population in South Africa is all these horrible murders and things happen to them. It never really gets investigated. That just gets brushed off. And that's that. But you have to look for it. It's not promoted in the media. And you may think, well, what does that have to do with me? Well, they're already using the same terms that they used in South Africa. Those are like, I've been saying it for years. Many others have been saying it for years. South Africa was the small scale beta experiment for the rest of it. And at this point, when you look around clown world, I don't see how anybody can shake their head and go, oh, they'll never do that here. I mean, look at where we were simply a year ago and how things have changed. I don't think it's possible to say, oh, they wouldn't dare do that.
Getting back to the article here. Minnesota has some of the highest racial disparities in the country in health, wealth, housing, how police treat folks, said the Minnesota Council of Churches CEO, the Reverend Curtis DeYoung. Those disparities all come from a deep history of racism. Well, I would challenge that, and I would say that those disparities could very well come from the fact that these are different people to us. And as my evidence of that, I'm going to switch now to a Daily Telegraph article, which is about the British Royal Air Force. The Royal Air Force has admitted for the first time that black applicants are significantly more likely to fail its selection tests than their white counterparts. Documents seen by the Telegraph reveal that white and Asian applicants to the RAF consistently score up to 36% higher than black candidates on tests of technical skills and spatial awareness. And of course, it's white and Asian applicants, so this cannot be something to do with an arbitrary dislike of skin colour. It has to be something else. Defence chiefs have insisted that the airwoman and airmen's selection tests have been proven not to be biased against any ethnicity, and blamed the disparities on underlying inequality in education. So what are they saying there? Are they saying that if we just educated the blacks more, they would do better at spatial awareness and technical skills? Spatial awareness is something that is innate. And we can see in the way that South Africa is today that it doesn't matter how much you teach them, that they still are not going to have the same technical skills that white people are capable of taking it on. And of course, it's nationalists that say this. It's very rare that we actually hear anybody else say this, but it does appear that the RAF are agreeing with nationalists here. They say in a statement, "It is also important to recognise that there can actually be true differences between groups." And that is fantastic that they have actually stated that, because that is the fact, that is the reality. There are true differences between people groups, and it's these differences between the people groups that are resulting in the different life outcomes for the members of these groups. It's nothing to do with white people being mean to blacks. It's nothing to do with the fact that they had a different employment system 200 years ago. What it is down to is that they are a different race to us. They have different things that they are better at. They have different things that they are worse at. And one of the things that they are not so good at is saving money. They have different health outcomes as well. Like it says here, health, wealth, housing, and how police treat folks. Well, they have different health outcomes because they have a different biology to us. They have different wealth outcomes because they're not very good at saving money. They have different housing. Again, that comes down to them not being very good at saving money. And how police treat folks, well, it's not down to how police treat folks. It's down to the fact that they have a much higher propensity for criminality. They're about 5 times more likely to be involved in violent crime than white people are. Again, it comes down to the fact that they are different people. So to see the RAF actually saying here that it is important to recognise that there can actually be true differences between groups, I think is absolutely incredible. And the figures for this that show that they score 36% less than white candidates appear within documents released under Freedom of Information laws after the Ministry of Defence refused to publish them for 5 months. So obviously the MOD really didn't want this information to come out, but all credit to them. Once the information did come out, they spoke the truth about it. What do you make of this, Grandpa?
I don't know. It kind of shoots down my hopes of getting some sort of reparations and blaming racism for the fact that I'm not a wealthy basketball player. I mean, you turn on any sports ball game and there's all these blacks, you know, and it's like, well, why? Well, because when it comes to a lot of these sports, you know, they're very good at it, you know, just because of the way they're built, because they're just physically capable of doing it in a way, you know, that makes them more suited to that sort of thing. And, you know, but it must be the racism thing is, and you already kind of hit on it, you kind of stole my thunder there. It's funny how in all of these studies, all these tests, the white racism never seems to extend to Asian people. Why is that? Why is it that this racism that we were told that white people seem to just genetically possess, it never seems to extend to the Asian people? I wonder why that is. It comes down to the fact that for these people, you know, a lot of these people anyway, this notion of equality, it's a religion for them. It really is. It's a form of religion. And it has, all, of course, because it's based on a lie, there's all of these contradictions. You know, for instance, they'll say, you know, they love diversity, but yet their religious doctrine of equality states that all the races are exactly the same except for skin color. You have this direct contradictions. And then one of their reactions to these contradictions is this magic voodoo of education. Well, these inequalities, it's due to racism. They just need more education. If we just do more education, it'd be like, again, saying if I did more training, then I too could be the next LeBron James. Well, it's absurd. I don't have the physical capacity to do that. I don't have the build to do that. And well, I'm way the hell too old now, but you know, it's like a magic voodoo form. But this, you know, and of course, when these people talk about equality, because when people like us talk about equality, we mean equality under the law. We mean people should be treated fairly. People should be treated equally under the law. Well, yeah, everybody should be for that. But that's not what it means to these people. To these people, equality means everybody's the same. Race is skin color, and that's it. There's no difference. And again, at the same time, they'll sit there and say, diversity is our strength. But if everybody's exactly the same, then how can you have any diversity? It's a direct contradiction, because this belief they have is all based on a lie. They've taken, you know, they tried to hide this, but then it got, you know, came out and they bravely went ahead and owned. Well, what comes across to me is stating the the obvious. This isn't exactly a breathtaking revelation here. It's obvious. I mean, we know it's reality. But see, here in Clown World, reality is simply not allowed.
Well, according to their logic, it must be that we just really like the color yellow. That's why Asians are doing well, and that's why blacks don't do so well in these tests. It's because we just don't like the color black, and the RAF testers, they must all be racists. That's their logic there. But getting back to the American Episcopal Church, the Reverend Stacy Smith, presiding elder of the African Methodist Episcopal Church in Minnesota and a Council of Churches board member, she said the reparations initiatives place the state at the epicenter of being transformed with racial justice. Truth-telling in our stories is so important, she said. There has been a vacuum of missing stories, not only from black and brown people, but our indigenous people and others as well. Well, all I seem to see on the television now is black and brown people. They make up over 50% of the adverts, and every time I switch the news on, there's a black person there telling us that we need to hear their story, and we have a vacuum of their missing stories. What they're talking about here is the opposite of reality. New York Bishop Andrew Deechy said the diocese played a significant and genuinely evil part in American slavery, including some churches' use of slaves as parish servants. He noted that in 1860, on the eve of the Civil War, delegates at the diocese's convention refused to approve a resolution condemning slavery. "We have a great deal to answer for," he said. How can he say that this is a significant and genuinely evil part when the church was using the slaves as parish servants? I mean, that says that obviously slavery was not an evil thing, or the church would not have been using them. The fact that the church refused to approve a resolution condemning it, again, shows that slavery was not seen as an evil institution. It was seen as a way to help these people. The way that they were looking at it is, if there was no slavery, how are they going to feed themselves? How are they going to clothe themselves? These people don't know anything about technology. They don't know anything about engineering. They don't know how to look after themselves. The only way we have to actually gain enough wealth to be able to redistribute it to them in the form of food, medicine, heat, housing, and clothing is if we expect them to work in exchange for that. I mean, that's all this was, basically. It was an agreement. You do the work, and we will cover all your costs. Why is it that is seen as somehow being an evil institution? And nobody was stopping these people from going back to their homeland once they were freed. They didn't go. They stayed where they were because they knew that they were well looked after. And a lot of them didn't want to see an end to slavery either, because they also thought, what are we going to do if we don't have the boss here who provides everything for us? How are we possibly going to be expected to do all this for ourselves? This is the way that these people were looking at it. These churchmen were good people. They were not evil people. And it's absolutely disgusting that the church will turn its back on its own people now and make out that they were evil when they were not.
Yeah. You know, I'd just like to take this time to say New York Bishop Andrew Deitch can just piss piss right off with his whole "we have a great deal to answer for." He's advocating collective guilt here. You know, I mean, we have a great, so we're all guilty of any perceived evil, which is determined solely by communists now in clown world. We have a lot to answer for. And how exactly are we supposed to answer for that? They throw these lines out here. We have a great deal to answer for. And they're very threatening. I don't think it's just, we need to give them more money. I don't think it stops at that. I don't think there's any reason to believe they're going to stop with that. And you have people like this coming out. This is just like the church version of when we saw those pictures of people going to Black Lives Matter, these white people, and putting chains on and kneeling down, and how sickening that was. And this is just yet another version of that. But this whole notion, we have a great deal to answer for. No, piss right off. I haven't owned any slaves. I don't know of any of my ancestors that owned any slaves. And if you're going to start applying collective guilt, then you can apply that to everybody. We go back and find, people that have done things that, viewed in today's modern context, weren't good things. Let's hold the entire race of people guilty for that, because that is what these people are advocating for. Holding the entire group of people alive today responsible for things judged out of historical context that their ancestors did. It just sounds like, another form of what they always go on about, blood libel and things such as this, but that's what they're advocating for. You have a lot to answer for the actions that you never took. That sounds fair, doesn't it?
Well, it's the equivalent of saying that we can hold all blacks responsible for the whites that have been murdered and raped by them. Of course, that's nonsensical. You can't hold all blacks guilty for that. You could say that they have a higher propensity for that sort of behavior than other races, but that's not to hold all of them guilty for that. And yet the reverse here is true for white people. They want to hold all white people guilty for the minute number of slave owners that mistreated their slaves. And they certainly don't hold the Arabs guilty for the castrating all the black male slaves that they took. There's no mention of Arab slavery here ever, or the fact that the Arabs took millions of white people as slaves, as well as blacks. It's always, let's make the white man feel guilty. Well, while Deechy and Doyle are white, the Bishop of Maryland, Eugene Sutton, is the first black cleric in that post. He has talked with white people who oppose reparations, saying they are not personally guilty of slaveholding or racism. That is a false conception, Sutton said. Reparations is simply, what will this generation do to repair the damage caused by previous generations? We may not all be guilty, but we all have a responsibility. Sutton said the $1 million allocation represents about 20% of the diocese's operating budget. So they're giving a fifth of their budget to Black Lives Matter, who are already earning as much as Amazon.com. And they're hammering this home here that all white people need to be repairing the damage. What damage was caused to these blacks? They are now brought up to civilizational standards. They know how to read and write. They know how to work. They're able to set up their own businesses. The black Africans that were actually brought from Africa to America are the luckiest and most well-off Africans that there are in the world, in the whole of history, in actual fact. When you look at black Africans throughout history, they were slaves in Egypt. They really didn't do a lot after that. They were taken by the Muslims as slaves. They certainly never had their own communities and representation, and were leading a country like Obama was the president of America. There is no justifiable platform whatsoever to be giving black people reparations for the institution of slavery. It was just the system of employment that was around for hundreds of years before we have the system of employment that we have now. And the church itself should be looking to what it says in the Bible about this. And it says, slave owners, treat your slaves with respect. And it speaks to the slaves, and it says to the slaves, love your masters. And that was the way that it was. That was the way that Christian slave owners behaved. They respected and they looked after their slaves, and they set a good example, and their slaves, in return, loved them. It's very obvious when you read the slavery literature at the time, it was written at the time, that these slaves looked upon their slave masters as a father to them. They were like a father figure, and not a disciplinarian father figure, but a father figure that provided everything that they wanted. And they were terrified that once slavery was gone, that nobody was going to be able to provide for them. And they were quite right. Terrible things happened at the end of slavery. Anyway, that we could go into a whole podcast talking about what happened at the end of slavery. The important thing here is that this church is giving away a fifth of its money to an organization that is already earning as much as Amazon, and that is absolutely scandalous. Grandpa, have you got any final thoughts on this?
Yeah, I just love his response to people who say that they're not personally guilty of slaveholding or racism. And his response basically in so many words is, well, yes, you are. He says, we may not all be guilty, but we all have a responsibility. So in other words, he says, well, yes, you are. So give us the money. I don't understand how anybody in good conscience could belong to this church in the first place, much less give them any sort of money. If you're going to do that, just give your money directly to BLM. Heck, they could use a few more billions, I suppose. This is all Marxism. And they can try to dress it up and under the guise of being part of a church. It doesn't matter if it's part of your social organization. Doesn't matter if it's part of your local, card club, book club, or whatever. This is all Marxism. They keep dressing it up in all these different forms and trying to color it as this and trying to create a narrative around it that it's something else. But make no mistake, it's Marxism. And if successful, the end result will be the same end result you get with Marxism time and time again.
It is, isn't it? It's the redistribution of wealth rather than the rewarding of wealth for those who have earned it. And where do these people think the wealth would have come from to actually pay for the slaves' keep if they hadn't done any work? If they hadn't done any work, if they hadn't done any cotton picking, if there hadn't been any plantations, they would have just been starving like their brethren in Africa that we're regularly told to send charity to because they're starving due to famine. That's what would have happened. And we're being told today that we should be giving them reparations for rescuing them from famine, basically. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Grandpa. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I'll be back on Monday with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.